It's time for HBCU Play.
Welcome to HBCU Play, everyone. LaRisha Harris here alongside me, Sam Crenshaw. We are excited about all the information we will bring forth to you today. A lot of special guests joining us, and we have some very special things to touch on. But first, just like every show, we begin with...
Here's this week's starting lineup on HBCU Play.
The starting lineup.
Yep, let's get things with the starting lineup. And while most of the news we have is upbeat and all about football and the games that are taking place as we approach a midway part of the season, and there is some sad news out of Nashville, Tennessee. The game last week between Tennessee State and Vanderbilt, two crosstown teams getting a chance to play each other. They're both there in the city of Nashville. And during that game, Christian Abercrombie, player for Tennessee State, suffers a head injury, leaves the game, has to be rushed to the hospital for emergency surgery, and he has been in the hospital, still remains in critical condition. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Christian Abercrombie and his teammates there at Tennessee State.
Some good news here, though, and these words coming from his mother, Stacy Abercrombie. She says that he's showing positive signs of recovery, such as lifting his hand and responding to music.
So we know that each day is a battle, but Christian, he's a strong young man. And he's fighting, and we see his fight.
We also heard about his recovery efforts from his uncle during a vigil they had for the linebacker, the sophomore linebacker, on Tuesday night. It was on the campus of TSU. And again, these words are coming from Christian's uncle, Kevin Richardson.
It's been a hard time, but we're going to get through it. God is here with us, and Christian, he knows it, and he's going to be just fine. He's going to be just fine. He is improving daily.
That is Kevin Richardson, the uncle of Christian Abercrombie, and we thank the Tennessean for that sound from the vigil that was held on the TSU campus. Now, a GoFundMe page has been set up for those who want to show support for Christian Abercrombie and the family, and it is gofundme.com/Tennessee-State-UNIV-athletics-DEPT. That is long, but that is the GoFundMe page for Christian Abercrombie. One more time, the GoFundMe page is gofundme.com/Tennessee-State-UNIV-athletics-DEPT to show your support for Christian Abercrombie.
And for those in the Atlanta metro area, remember, Abercrombie is from this area. He was actually a student at Westlake High School. There will be a second prayer vigil for him that's being organized by the high school on Monday at 7:30. It'll be at the football stadium located at 2400 Union Road in Southwest Atlanta. And again, this vigil is being put together by Abercrombie's family and friends, along with community leaders and educators from Westlake High School, since he is a native and an alum of that high school. And again, it's Monday, 7:30 at Westlake High School Football Stadium, 2400 Union Road, Southwest in Atlanta.
A lot of support and prayers coming the way for the family, and especially for this young player. Let's hear now from Coach Rod Reed, Tennessee State, about this player.
Yeah, first of all, I'd just like to thank all the outpouring of support by all the coaches around the conference and around the nation. For that matter, I've got a lot of prayers, a lot of support, a lot of phone calls, a lot of text messages from everybody. But our OVC coaches and OVC staff and officials, it's been phenomenal with the support you guys have given us over here at Tennessee State and me personally. So I first of all like to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for the continued prayers and all of that for Christian and his family, and myself.
Tennessee State head football coach Rod Reed, and we thank the Tennessee State Sports Information Department for those comments from the coach. Don't forget, once again, the GoFundMe page for Christian Abercrombie is gofundme.com/Tennessee-State-UNIV-athletics-DEPT. And we'll have that for you again, once again, later on in our program.
again, thoughts and prayers for the Tennessee State player. But despite having that unfortunate event, there it was a great effort by the team itself, especially against that SEC opponent, Mr. Crenshaw.
Got to believe it. Playing against Vanderbilt, and the teams are in the same town. They're both there in Nashville, and people know each other. The coaches are friends, and the fans and the boosters of the teams, they all know each other. So to get together and play this game when they do ever so many years is really a big deal there in the city of Nashville, and for Tennessee State to go out and play the way that they did. Vanderbilt wins it 31-27. But what a day for the TSU Tigers, and what a great effort.
Yes, and especially a great effort from their quarterback, Demry Croft. Accuracy on point this game, 22 for 31, passed for 269 yards, and had three TDs, no interceptions. Great job, great performance from the quarterback.
Especially when you consider they had seen their teammate taken away to the hospital. It seemed to have a galvanizing effect on their team. While they come up short, the final score 31-27, this is what Coach Rod Reed had to say about his team's effort.
You know, we went over, and I thought our kids played a heck of a game over at Vanderbilt. We gave ourselves an opportunity in the fourth quarter to win. When you play games like that, that's all you can ask for. You know, we thought we had it going, and we gave up a big play there late in the fourth quarter. And then our offense drove the ball down again, and we stalled there on the 13-yard line.
So once again, the final score, Vanderbilt 31, Tennessee State 27 in that game.
More big winners from Saturday, though. Alcorn State, talk about them, Crenshaw, coming out big on the roll, right?
Going on the road to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and getting the win 20-3 over Southern University. That's big for Alcorn.
They ruined their homecoming.
Spoil homecoming, the Braves did. And they come away with the victory there. Also in the SWAC, how about Prairie View A&M? We called it last week. At least I called it last week.
Yeah.
Feel like it was time for them to get that win over Grambling down in the Cotton Bowl. 22-16 final score. Prairie View the win over the G-Men in front of a big crowd.
49,000 people Saturday at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. And again, like you said, they defeated two-time defending conference champion Grambling State. So now, to me, in my eyes, I believe that Prairie View is the top dog in this conference, and everybody's going to be gunning for these guys.
You realize how strange that sounds to say that everybody in the conference is now chasing Prairie View. For years, it's been everybody's homecoming game. Mm-hmm. And now, all of a sudden, they're the team everybody's trying to beat, and they are looking great. With a new coach, first year in.
Eric Dooley.
Shout out to Coach.
He's doing his thing over there.
He's doing it.
Obviously, the guys they've bought into a system, and it's working. They're reaping the harvest of what they've implemented so far this season. And, hey, they did it. They took down the guys who were at the top of the mountain, even though we heard Coach Broderick Fobbs, we let you hear it earlier at the beginning of the season. Coach Fobbs said, hey, they were starting over at the starting line just like everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't consider themselves at the top of the mountain. And
well, that's some new things. Else. Obviously, Grambling breaking in a new quarterback and some players that are missing from last year's team the past 2 years, but there's still a lot of football left to be played, Larisha. Meanwhile, in the MEAC, North Carolina A&T got back on track. They woke up midway through the second quarter of their game last Thursday night against South Carolina State, and they win that game 31-16. So to get them back into the win column. And another game that jumped off the page for me was Florida A&M's win over North Carolina Central, Larisha, 55-14.
That was a big one.
Where did that come from? All of a sudden, the Rattlers with this big win over this North Carolina Central team that's been one of the powers in the conference in recent years.
Kudos to FAMU for pulling things together and really trying to get on a good path. And let everybody know that they're here and they're forced to be reckoned with. They're trying to make sure their presence is known within the MEAC, especially when it comes down to their ground attack. We saw Deshaun Smith run 20 times for 152 yards to lead FAMU in the run effort. So even though no one saw this big win over North Carolina Central coming, it happened again. FAMU, the Rattlers, 55-14 over North Carolina Central.
Yeah, keeping an eye on those Florida A&M Rattlers. Meanwhile, from the CIAA, last week, Larisha, I guess, was Amir Hall, the outstanding quarterback for Bowie State,
mm-hmm.
and he had to work some magic late in the game to help pull out a win over Winston-Salem State. Bowie State wins this game 20-17 over the Rams after a little magic from Mr. Hall.
The guy is just a dynamic player. He's a dual threat. He can pass and he can run. This game, particularly, his passing was his strength. He had about 281 passing yards. and he connected on 28 out of 52. So he's doing his thing, and he's helping his team push forward.
Has a goal that he's trying to reach, and this was less than 2 minutes to play in the game, connects on a big touchdown pass that lifts the Bulldogs to the victory over Winston-Salem State. One more game, this team to mention, is in the SIAC, where we find the one and only still unbeaten HBCU football team. That's the Maroon Tigers of Morehouse.
Yes, they spotted Kentucky State an early 14-0 lead, but then they came back to knock them off 23-21.
Yep, shout out to Coach Rich Freeman and the men of Morehouse. They just keep on rolling. They're 5-0, headed to Columbus for the big showdown against Tuskegee coming up this week. All right, we're just getting started with HBCU Play for this week. You want to stay tuned because coming up next, we're going to go straight from the source with our very special guest, CIAA Commissioner Jackie McWilliams. That's coming up. I'm Sam Crenshaw with Larisha Harris, and you're listening to HBCU Play.
Time out. There's more coming your way on HBCU Play on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. When you want to know what's happening in HBCU sports, you need to get the info straight from the source.
Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
Here's Larisha Harris and Sam Crenshaw with more of HBCU Play on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Welcome back, everyone, to HBCU Play. So glad you could be with us this week. Sam Crenshaw along with Larisha Harrison. Right now we're going to go to the segment we call Straight from the Source, and we're very happy to welcome in a very, very special guest. It is the Commissioner of the Central Intercollegiate Athletic Association, CIAA, Jackie McWilliams. Welcome to HBCU Play.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you all.
Gosh, I don't know where to begin with you, but let's begin at the beginning. You being the commissioner of this conference now, in your sixth year, how do you describe being the commissioner of the CIAA?
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it's the sixth season and the sixth year. And it's been exhilarating. It's been challenging. It's been progressive. It's been, I don't know, it's been all kind of emotions. I've been up and down in a good way, you know, with CIAA. I came into a situation where there needed to be some changes, and they happened pretty quickly. And I think we've grown so fast. Like, the CIAA just continues to evolve, and it's really fun to be a part of an organization that has so much history and value, not just to this community of our member institutions, but in the country.
Well, you are the person that has CIAA in your heart because you're a graduate of an institution that was a CIAA member at the time at Hampton University. Talk about that, just your experiences as an undergraduate and just the pride that it brings in you having that position now. Did you ever see yourself wanting to be in this position?
I did, but it was later on. You know, I think when you're in college and, you know, my undergrad was psychology, and then I went and got my master's in sports management. And I'm not sure that I knew what a commissioner really was. I mean, you know, you know that you want to work in sports or have that opportunity, but there's so many opportunities in athletics, from compliance to coaching to academic to professional to the Olympics. And so to have the opportunity to work in college athletics has been the fit for me. And my coach at Hampton really encouraged me. I think he tried to encourage women, us, to stay in athletics because there's just such a shortage of women, particularly African-American women, who are in the field. And I think he kind of pushed me to stay in athletics and go get my master's. And I'm glad that I went to Hampton. It was probably the best experience ever for me, collegiate experience. I can tell you, like most of us, you go in your freshman year and you're a little homesick and you're trying to party a little bit too much, particularly at an HBCU. But reality sits in when the midterm grades come in and your coaches, particularly if you're athletes, know that you're about to go home if you don't get it together. And so, you know, I was an athlete under Coach Sweat, who then went to Norfolk, but I stayed at Hampton. I didn't want to transfer because Hampton was my choice of institution, and had a great collegiate experience, even as, you know, CIAA. What that meant in college, I had no clue what being the all-conference, all-tournament, all-player, player of the year, what that really looked like until now I look back and be like, that was a huge opportunity for me to play two sports that I love, but then even to have this success and then take that success and be in this position as commissioner. So it's kind of surreal to kind of watch our athletes and understand that I have the opportunity to play the game, but then use the platform to grow, you know, academically, athletically, but also as an administrator to be in this role and position. It's pretty cool.
Now, Commissioner, you are the first African-American female to ever hold this particular position. I'm sure that was monumental for you as well.
You know, Larisha, I don't think I ever thought about it until people start communicating it. Like, you're the first, because I definitely don't ever want to be the last. I would love to see more women, particularly African-American women, be commissioners. And it's not an easy opportunity to access to. I've just been fortunate to be under some great mentors, to have some great opportunities to prepare me for the position. And so I definitely, you know, it's an honor. It's a legacy in my family, you know, for my daughter to see me in this role, or other girls and women, or even men to see me in this role and have the desire to figure out how did I get it. As early as this weekend, an older gentleman at the Virginia Union game said, how does this look like for you? You know, how did you get here? And to give him, you know, an elevator pitch. And he's like, wow, you have to tell more people about your story. And so I just feel blessed and extremely honored to be in this role and have the opportunity to use this platform to demonstrate my passion for athletics, college athletics, but also find ways to bring other people along.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to the CIAA Commissioner, Jackie McWilliams. Now, you were recently inducted into the Hampton University Athletic Hall of Fame. Happened this summer, actually, for being a two-sport athlete in both basketball and volleyball, which you talked about a little bit, but receiving this honor, being inducted into the Hall of Fame, just describe your emotions when you found out and then going through that ceremony.
Wow, so you're going to make me cry this early in the morning? you know, I got the letter from the athletic director, Jean, who's also a dear colleague, and I think I just stared at it, and I'm like, and I didn't even tell anybody for a minute. My daughter was with me, and I said, I'm in the Hall of Fame. And I kind of held it to myself, and then I shared it with a couple of my best friends. And I got that letter like early in the year. And you know, I think when I got there and I saw, you know, so many other athletes, it almost was like, you know, am I worthy? And one of my football players, Richard Taylor, he was a senior when I was a freshman, junior. He always took care of me like the big brother. Him and his wife have been so encouraging to me since I've been here. And what he said to me before the ceremony is, walk into your blessing. You deserve this. Mm-hmm. And it was in that moment when I was like, okay, it's okay. It's okay to receive this honor. Because honestly, I just want to do great work and be a great person and to serve and be my best every day. And I'm not looking to be honored for something I know I should be doing anyways. And so to get the honor was extremely humbling. It's still humbling. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful that Hampton sees me in that light and that I could represent them every single day in a way that would please them or make them proud, you know, that I'm a Hampton graduate, as I am proud to have been a member of or be an alumnus of Hampton.
Pleased to be spending some time with Jackie McWilliams, who is a proud alumnus of Hampton University, but she's also the commissioner of the CIAA and doing a lot of new and creative and innovative things, a lot of things to do with exposure for your student athletes and for your conference. Talk about some of the things that you're doing in that direction for exposure for your conference.
Yeah, we're ending our five-year strategic plan. It ends in 2020. Our board approved it back in 15, And that was huge for us. We've been really focused on managing expectations in areas, our finance, but the exposure for our student athletes, whether it's championship experience, whether it's leadership development programs, academic success. And so those areas have been extremely important to us, but finding key partners to help us has also been critical. We hired or are in partnership with Liquid Soul, who are out of Atlanta, a minority-owned company. An HBCU grad, Tyrell Whitley, is the CEO of the company. We went in partnership with them to really help us identify new ways of exposing our conference throughout the year. Living the Legacy is one of our new brand names to complement CIAA for Life. And engaging our students in that way has been important, from our Student Athlete Advisory Committee all the way to our administrators. You know, Under Armour is our new brand of choice for uniforms. So whatever we do and try to expose, we try to make sure that all the dots are connected with the CIAA brand and that it's seamless. And that takes time. It takes having good partners. Our media rights partner, Van Wagner Sports and Entertainment, we're going into our second year with them. They sell our sponsorships and our media rights for us. And they've been extremely qualified to support the things that we're trying to do as an organization. But the partnership and the collaboration with our sponsors continues to help us with our branding opportunities initiative. So you'll see a lot of new things come out this year that I'm really pleased about. But more so, I'm pleased that we have over 3,000 student athletes that we get to serve every day, and we can create these new and unique experiences at our championships to make them feel like if they never went to an NCAA championship, what they got from the CIAA is a feeling of pride and opportunity to be their best at this level.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Folks, we're talking with Commissioner Jackie McWilliams from the CIAA, and we're going to take a break. We got to come to another segment. Ms. Commissioner, can you hang on with us for the next segment?
Oh, absolutely.
We have so many things we want to talk with you about, especially about an event that used to be known as the CIAA tournament. Today, people just call it the CIAA. We're going to continue coming up next in the playbook. Stay with us. This is Sam and Larisha on HBCU Play.
Time out. Stay where you are for more HBCU Play on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We're breaking down the X's and O's.
That's precise.
In the playbook.
It's a precise breakdown.
On HBCU Play on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Welcome back to HBCU Play. Larisha Harris here alongside me, Sam Crenshaw. And we are still continuing our conversation with the CIAA Commissioner, Jackie McWilliams. She's joining us for this segment, The Playbook. Here on HBCU Play, we've been talking all about the CIAA basketball tournament and its potential to move out of Charlotte. We know that various cities are putting in their bids. Commissioner, from your perspective, talk about some of the big changes that are being made and any updates when it comes down to the potential of this basketball tournament, the most lucrative annual event that the city has hosted for some time now. Talk about the big changes that could potentially happen.
Yeah, you know, CIAA, all of our championships. So we have 14 championships, and as most people know, the men's and women's basketball tournament is our major event, and that's where most of our partnerships and revenue opportunity come from. We've been in Charlotte. We're going on 14 years this year. The agreement here ends in 2020, which will be 15-year partnership here in the community of Charlotte, North Carolina. This past spring, our board, or over the past year, the board has really been talking about whether we should go out to bid or not. So it was agreed upon this past spring that we would go out to bid to at least give other cities an opportunity. But, you know, for business practices, I know our board knows it's good business sense. They have to go out to bid on their campuses and believe that the conference should be doing the same. We do that with all of our other championships as well. We give other institutions or cities seize the opportunity to bid, whether it's football or if you want to host a bowling championship. So we try to be consistent among moving our championships north and south because of the lay of the land of all 13 now members that we have in our conference. So we've enjoyed our success here in Charlotte since 2016. The tournament continues to grow. We had about 140,000 fans in 18, about $50 million in economic impact. And we're mindful that most of our CIAA footprint is in North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and now we have South Carolina. So I think there's a lot of strategy around going out to bid and determining whether we should stay here or go somewhere else. And if we go, what does that really look like? And so we're in the bidding process right now. Most cities have an arena or venue. They have to have at least 8,000 to 10,000 seated arena. We're in the spectrum now that is about 18, maybe 21,000. It's a pretty big venue for us. So we're closing the upper bowl this coming year, and we'll focus on the lower bowl and try to pack the house with that venue. But also just the proximity of hotels, the venues for external activities for our fan fest. CIAA official events, I mean, being able to accommodate the public safety for our fans and student-athletes, so having that partnership within the community, but also working with the corporate community within those cities, similar to what we do here in Charlotte, to make sure that we're all collaborating in a way to make the tournament success. So we really depend on this tournament. You know, as the NCAA depends on the men's Final Four, we depend on the CIAA basketball tournament to keep us whole and to provide unique opportunities, not just for men's and women's basketball, but the other 12 championships that we host annually.
Now, Commissioner, we're here in Atlanta, and oftentimes I hear people always say, oh, we're going up to the CIAA, but some of those people I know will not step foot into the actual game itself. Is that a concern about bringing the focus back to the actual tournament, the games itself?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, you know, every year we're just trying to think of new ways to engage people and get them excited about coming into the venue. You know, sometimes it's about talent. Sometimes it's about if you're connected to the alumni, to the school. Sometimes it's about reuniting. Like, we have people who come, this was their 50th tournament that they've been to, so there's tradition there. So when you're, and then now we're trying to get the young, the Gen X or millennials or the younger, the students in the building and trying to find ways to get them inside. So I think we'll have some new ideas that come this year, working with our member institutions, new ticket packages that we've explored that we'll be offering this fall, beginning in November. So discounts, some opportunities with hotel reductions on that. So I think we're trying to get creative to engage more people in the building. The reality is that, you know, people want to be a part of the atmosphere and part of the CIAA, not necessarily the games, not necessarily the fan fest. They just want to reunite. But we're always looking for ways. If there's 140,000 people in the city of Charlotte, then why isn't there 10,000 to 20,000 people trying to get into the building? And so that is a constant challenge that we have to work on. And it's not just our event. You know, every conference has have these type of issues that they have to work on annually based on their conference and their member institutions. But CIAA is a pretty unique footprint that gives us a little bit more challenges, I think, than some other conferences.
Well, I know I'm not a CIAA alum, but can I throw in my bid or my pitch to get you guys to come to Atlanta, to bring it down here to Atlanta?
You got a lot of alumni down here.
Yeah, we do. You know, Atlanta didn't submit a bid at this point. So, you know, it's we put it out there for all host cities. And so, you know, it's really up to the cities to determine if that opportunity for them to host is worth CIAA being in Atlanta. I think the challenge for us with Atlanta is just the footprint. Eight of our schools are in North Carolina. We have two schools in Virginia. We have one in Maryland, one in Pennsylvania. So when you go to Atlanta, you're kind of spreading the footprint a little bit further. So that discussion with the board would have to be, you know, extremely what would be the offerings to pull most of our members more south than what we currently are here in Charlotte.
Well, Ms. Commissioner, there's one incoming member that would be kind of upset you didn't mention them, and those are the folks down in Claflin. And to me, that probably opens up Columbia as a possible place.
Yeah. Claflin is, we're excited to have Claflin in our conference. I mean, they are ready to go. I mean, July 1 was their entry point into the CIAA. Their alumni is strong. The school is strong. They are a great template for what they do in their athletic program, their president's involvement. And so our board and our member conference is very excited about having them. And, again, they're in South Carolina, so that does open up a new footprint for our member institutions to look at championships in their area.
Spending some time talking with Jackie McWilliams, the commissioner of the Central Intercollegiate Athletic Association, the CIAA, and we just talked about a new member coming into the conference in Claflin. Talk about new members and what would a new member, the profile of a potential new member for your conference be, and does it have to be an HBCU? I ask you that question because your alma mater recently joined a conference that is not affiliated with a lot of with HBCUs. They're the only one in the Big South. Is being an HBCU a part of a prerequisite to be in the CIAA?
Not at all. Shawan University is currently a member of our conference. They're actually moving out next year because they expanded their sports platform, and a lot of the sports that they are now offering, like lacrosse and field hockey and soccer, we don't offer that. And so, you know, I think what institutions look for is a place that fits for their sports programs or academic programs. And whether an HBCU or not, you know, the conference has to determine, do they bring value, to the conference. And so Shawan has been a member probably over 12 or 13 years, or maybe a little longer, of the CIAA. They'll keep football in our conference and also women's bowling. Prior to Claflin getting in, our conference had a policy that you had to have football in order to be a member of our conference. Claflin doesn't have football. A year and a half ago, the conversation with our board became, do we want to strap ourselves with not being able to expand by having or requiring member institutions who may not want football because of the cost of football, but have all other programs and maybe even more that we don't offer that may benefit the conference. And so once they made that decision, it opened up the door to evaluate other member institutions who could fit our platform and who could be a member of the CIAA. About 4 years ago, we did a feasibility study, and part of that feasibility study was to evaluate expansion for the conference and what schools particularly could fit into the CIAA based on where we're located, from Division I to NAIA to Division II, or schools who are Division III who could move up to Division II. Claflin fit the platform for us. They had an interest to come to the CIAA, but again, we had a policy that wouldn't allow them to come in. Once that policy changed, there was more dialogue from them about their interest in being a member of the CIAA, and so here they are. At this point, you know, we have 13 schools. Shawan will leave out next year, so we'll have 12 again. We're constantly looking at associate members. We would like to bring back baseball and men's tennis and identify schools, not maybe as full members, but associate members that could help us bring those two sports back so that our men's sports are just as healthy as our women's sports.
Well, Commissioner, we just want to thank you for joining us here on HBCU Play, and we greatly appreciate all the insight, all the dimes that you just dropped on us.
Oh, thanks, Larisha and Sam, and appreciate you guys just covering HBCUs. You're just as passionate as me and my other colleagues. I mean, this is a unique space that we get to work in every single day. Culturally, it's different. Diversity is different. It's just a place. I love CIAA. It's a grounding foundation for me. And to be a part of this dialogue and tell people our story is always great. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you. And maybe we'll come up and visit you for the tournament in February.
You need to come on up here. Everybody else is here.
Sounds good to me. Sounds like a trip.
Thank you.
Thank you once again for joining us. That is Commissioner Jackie McWilliams from the CIAA. You stay tuned for more as we head for the kickoff on HBCU Play with Sam and Larisha.
Time out. We'll be right back with more HBCU Play on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. It's almost game time on HBCU Play. We're getting ready for the kickoff with Larisha Harris.
You are clearly so quick-witted and beautiful.
And Sam Grimshaw.
He's a righteous dude.
On News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Welcome back to HBCU Play. LaRisha Harris here. Alongside me, Sam Crenshaw. And it's time for the kickoff as we prepare you for all the games that you can look forward to this weekend. So to start us off, going to talk about South Carolina State at Morgan State. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff, and it's their homecoming. You can catch that on Sports Fever Network and ESPN3.
Be watching to see how Morgan State follows up from having that upset win over North Carolina A&T over a week ago. Of course, down the road from us here in Atlanta, down in Columbus, it will be Morehouse and Tuskegee, the 83rd Tuskegee Morehouse Classic.
And that's going to be on Flow Football and ESPN3 as well. That game has a 2 o'clock Central Time kickoff.
They always fill up Memorial Stadium for that one. There'll be 25,000 or more for that game coming up this week, LaRisha. In Birmingham, it's homecoming for Miles, and Central State is coming to call. It's a 2 p.m. Central Time start. It's homecoming for Miles, and they'll be available on Flow Football.
I love this time of year. All the homecomings start to happen, and, you know, I always like all this time of year. But anyway, Lane at Hampton, that's a 2 o'clock kickoff as well. It's actually Parents' Day and Greek Day. You can catch that game on ESPN+.
Let's see how North Carolina Central rebounds from that game against Florida A&M, if they can this week, because Howard is coming to town.
Ooh.
Howard and Durham to take on North Carolina Central, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That game will be available on ESPN3.
You got to watch out for Kalen Newton right there.
Meanwhile, how about the Rattlers? They were the one who put the big beating down on North Carolina Central. They got Norfolk State coming down to Tallahassee. It's a 4 p.m. Eastern time start. That game is on ESPN3. And then how about your folks, LaRisha?
Yes, and it's my homecoming, my alma mater, Mississippi Valley at Bethune-Cookman University. 4 o'clock kickoff. You can catch that game on ESPN3. Hail Wildcats. Let's get the win for our homecoming, okay?
Look at it. Look at it. Look at it.
Hail Wildcats. It's our homecoming.
You just have to do it. You have to do it.
I had to.
Down on the Georgia coast, Savannah State's at home against Charleston Southern. It's a 6 o'clock Eastern time start on ESPN3.
North Carolina A&T at Delaware State, 7 o'clock kickoff, and that's also on ESPN3.
Clark Atlanta's playing Fort Valley. That's a 6 o'clock start Eastern time. That is on Flow Football. And one more game to tell you about, LaRisha.
Tennessee State at Austin Peay. That's a 7 o'clock Eastern time kickoff as well. And that game can be seen on ESPN3.
And of course, as Tennessee State plays that game, thoughts will be on their teammate, obviously, Christian Abercrombie, who suffered the severe head injury in the game last week against Vanderbilt. Still in critical condition.
But he's making improvements.
Once again, we want to remind people about the GoFundMe page. If you want to support Christian and his family at Tennessee State, you can go to this GoFundMe.com/Tennessee-State-UNIV-Athletics-DEPT. You want to show the support. And also, there's the vigil on Monday night.
Yes, there's a vigil Monday at 7:30 at the Westlake High School Football Stadium, located at 2400 Union Road Southwest in Atlanta.
Want to keep Christian Abercrombie and his family lifted up in prayer, y'all, throughout this whole weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. That's going to do it for this week's show.
Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can hit me up, LaRisha_H on Twitter. And all other social media platforms as well. LaRisha_H. That's LaRisha_H. And be sure to follow WAOK on Twitter. It's simply WAOK.
And I'm Sam Crenshaw, 23, on Twitter. Make sure and follow me as well. And also listen to our program nationwide on the radio.com app.
Thank you so much for listening to the show today. We hope you enjoyed all the information. We'll have a lot more for you next week.
Enjoy the games. We'll see you here next week on HBCU Play.
Thanks for listening to HBCU Play.